The Guardian.
We're not going to wait until October the 31st before getting on with our plans to take this country forward.
We promised we'd be back when the House of Commons returns next week. But unlike Parliament, even Boris Johnson can't keep us away.
And that's why we are going to have a Queen's speech, and we're going to do it on October the 14th. And we've got to move ahead now with a new legislative programme.
And so he secured approval from the Queen for a 5-week suspension of Parliament from mid-September. In an unprecedented statement, John Bercow, the Speaker of the House of Commons, said the move represented a constitutional outrage. A threat to our democracy, said Jeremy Corbyn. Their sentiment was echoed by crowds outside Parliament and in cities across the country last night. Boris Johnson insisted his controversial move is constitutionally sound, will kickstart a new agenda for his government, and crucially, will deliver the Brexit vote.
And there will be ample time on both sides of that crucial October the 17th summit, ample time in Parliament for MPs to debate the EU, to debate Brexit, and all the other issues. Ample time.
I'm Jessica Elgott, The Guardian's chief political correspondent, and in today's Politics Weekly, I'm convening a snap panel of my fellow Guardian journalists to try and make sense of what this suspension means for the immediate future of Brexit and the long-term implications for democracy. Critics on all sides of the House are outraged by what they see as a significant reduction in the number of days available to debate Brexit in Parliament and an attempt to force through a no deal. Boris Johnson argues that the suspension is to allow time for a Queen's speech and to focus on domestic policies such as healthcare and policing. But his decision has prompted many questions about ulterior motives. I'm joined by Raphael Baer, Owen Jones and Sonia Soda to discuss this and many, many other intricacies and possible fallouts from the Prime Minister's decision. So, Raph, what do you think prompted this move? And how long do you think it's been in the making? Do you think it has been the talk of alliances between Corbyn and Swinson? Or do you think this has all been cooked up a lot earlier than that?
I think the way it was deployed suggests that a fair amount of strategic planning went into it. It was one of the contingencies that Number 10 thought you might want to mobilise. I mean, it's pretty clear what the practical sort of function of it is. You know, it's not exactly a secret. You basically want to try and remove as much time from Parliament as you can to make it harder for people who don't want a no-deal Brexit or don't want Brexit on Boris Johnson's terms to erect legislative barriers against that. And the sort of the fiddly bit of it is that quite clearly also Number 10 wants to do it in a way that you can hold up and say this is legally safe and at some level constitutionally proper, and that slightly limits the time frame in which you can do it because of amendments that were added to bills at the end of the last session saying what Parliament can and can't do, which is technical and not really relevant anymore. I think where it becomes problematic and where Number 10 probably haven't necessarily sort of foreseen or calculated the way this plays out is that you are then in a position of having to defend it in two completely contradictory ways. One, which is this is completely normal. You'd have a prorogment and then you have a new parliamentary session with the Queen's speech. We're a new government. We've got loads to do. It's nothing to do with Brexit. Everyone relax. And also, these blooming Remainers causing trouble in Parliament. We just need to get this damn thing done. It's everything to do with Brexit. Now, those two things can't obviously be true at the same time. And ministers and others having to come out and sort of say them both simultaneously, the cynicism is a bit too pungent. And that's the bit where I think Number 10 are a bit exposed. In every other respect, it looks like a pretty well-planned, well-deployed operation.
Yeah, and I think that probably although that there doesn't seem to be a massive amount of constitutional impropriety that you could really kind of get, the courts could get their teeth into, certainly there'll be attempts, but on the face of it, it doesn't seem like that. The reality is that this is a 5-week proroguing of Parliament is pretty unprecedented, isn't it? I mean, it's not, even though it might be proper, it's not business as usual.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it's the longest proroguing of Parliament that we've seen in decades, I think. And it's, you know, it might be sort of proper when you look at the formal rules, the way that our system works. But when you take a step back from this, you know, the country is in the biggest crisis, biggest political crisis that we've seen for decades. You know, MPs have talked about over the summer trying to exert, you know, their will. We know there's a majority of MPs who are against a no deal outcome. And you've basically got the Prime Minister saying, well, you know, Parliament may be against it, I'm just going to shut it down to make sure that they can't stop me. So that's why I think there's been so much outrage about this in the last 24 hours.
Yeah, I mean, it seems pretty simple to people who were outside Parliament, for example, demonstrating last night, that this is, even however you might dress it up, however someone like Jacob Rees-Mogg might dress it up this morning, that this is shutting down Parliament for the time that you can and do so and manage to save face about it. But it is about avoiding scrutiny, and people can see that, can't they?
Of course, straightforward. I mean, what's on their side? I saw it written yesterday. You know, the British Constitution is more of a vibe than a written document, and that is beneficial to the government in these circumstances. But yeah, I mean, look, it was striking that Snap YouGov poll showed that only 27% of people supported this. A quarter of Leave voters opposed the proroguing of Parliament. Now, clearly what the government strategy is, driven by Dominic Cummings, of course, the former Vote Leave key strategist, is to signal to Brexit Party voters that we will be as extreme and mad and do what, you know, we do the most extreme, ridiculous, absurd things possible in order to secure this Brexit and therefore secure the trust that you have lost in us over the last 2.5 years since the last general election in particular. But I think, you know, what was fascinating about the protests yesterday, they were called with 4 hours notice. And they were, it was, you know, very big, very angry, very determined. And I think there's been this real sense of deflation amongst the opponents of Boris Johnson since he became Prime Minister, a lack of strategic direction. But there seemed to be a sense of a re-emergence of a sense of real sense of purpose. And that, of course, no deal, the fact that, as Michael Gove himself in the Daily Mail article earlier this year made it clear, that was not put to the British people by his campaign during the referendum campaign, that the likes of Nigel Farage were extolling Norway, which is as far from the so-called no deal scenario, which in practice is a temporary state of economic chaos where we go back on our knees to the EU to negotiate again. The fact that a majority of the British people voted for parties in the general election, which ruled out no deal explicitly in their manifestos. So the fact they're trying to shut down any possible scrutiny of something which has no democratic mandate is something which I think gives a sense of legitimacy and determination and moral and political authority for those who are demonstrating. And I think we're going to see a big escalation of those protests, including civil disobedience, in the coming weeks.
I think it also makes it very awkward for people inside the government who have made very, very explicit statements very recently to the effect that prorogation would be, you know, a constitutional outrage.
Lots of them so getting tweeted last night.
Yeah, so you've got, you know, Matt Hancock and Sajid Javid and Michael Gove. These people who...
Amber Rudd,
yeah. So these are people who...
Nicky Morgan!
And
Boris Johnson!
Oh, yeah. and exactly. And it is, you know, I think one of the calculations that certainly someone like Dominic Cummings will make, and I think it, you know, will be Boris Johnson's instincts as well, is that, you know, there is a huge sort of available resource in the country, which is people who just want it done, are bored with the detail, don't care anymore, and, you know, and then, you know, there is a, as it were, a sort of a radicalised wing of that, which is Brexit Party voters who want it done at any cost and feel very passionate about it. But that should, you know, you combine those sort of soft urgency and radical urgency, then that's an awful lot of people who should support what you do. And I wonder whether, and I'm this is pure sort of speculation now, I wonder whether they've landed in the wrong place, rather than sort of pitching this now as like, well, we're just, this is just, you know, smack a firm government getting it done. They've slightly landed in a, you know, against people's intrinsic spirit of fair play. And it's actually not about Brexit in Europe. It's just about sort of really disgraceful behaviour. And you've got all these front bench people who don't really want to go on television and defend it, because they were again then going to have their own words from 2 months ago thrown in their face. And Ruth Davidson deciding, you know, obviously this decision has been coming, but deciding that she simply could not actually stand as being, you know, no longer be the leader of the Scottish Tory party, is very emblematic of that. She's someone who literally cannot bring herself to defend what the government is doing. And that will be...
And that's hugely damaging, you know, the Tories' electoral prospects in Scotland.
It was always really difficult for the Tories in Scotland. But I think now they've lost Ruth Davidson, it's looking even more... Their seats in Scotland are looking even more precarious. And I think that does, you know, a lot of this sort of is predicated on the prospect that they're of a general election. And, you know, it's definitely something that Boris Johnson and Dominic Cummings are thinking about. And I think, you know, someone like Ruth Davidson going really increases the risk, actually, that Boris Johnson might not win that election. If they lose marginal seats, the Lib Dems in the South West, if they get completely annihilated in Scotland, that's a lot of seats they have
to
win
without the
Labour.
Brexit parties.
Without Scotland, they may not be, actually be in government right now. It's one of the kind of bizarre ironies of the last election. Yeah, I mean, I think the danger, well, with Boris Johnson is that sense of overreach. What he's trying to do is present himself as a populist tribune of the people against the nefarious elites. The problem with him is Boris Johnson could not personify more, I suppose, that sense of the privileged toff Tory if he tried.
That's never seemed to matter, though, really, has it?
In the past, it hasn't. But I think, you know, the 2012 or 2016, even before the referendum, incarnation of Boris Johnson is not what we're talking about today in any sense. You know, he goes down like a cup of sick in London, a place where he won the mayoralty twice. Admittedly, only a minority of people voted in those elections, and it seemed to be low stakes, but nonetheless. And I think that sense of is he actually looking like the tribune of the people, or will it end up looking like this is an entitled Tory with no democratic mandate, who is, you know, trashing our democracy like the Bullingdon Club once trashed restaurants. I mean, I think he's in real danger of not looking like the populist he thinks he... I mean, he wants to do a people versus parliament election in October or November after Brexit happens. I mean, no, Dominic Cummings is planning on potentially a general election the day before Brexit even happens, and go into the election and say, vote Tory and Brexit will happen in 24 hours. So, he's trying his populist approach, but if Labour are canny and savvy enough, and they were very slow in framing him when he became Prime Minister, then he'll be put back in his box as a kind of, you know, David Cameron on speed kind of privileged Tory who's acting in a self-entitled, born-to-rule sort of way.
And I think just to add to that briefly, I think what Raph was saying about, you know, this might potentially, is this something that just people on the Remain side are really upset about, or is it something that goes against that British sense of fair play? I think that's still really up for grabs, actually. And I think a lot will depend in terms of the outcome of an election about how polarised the country is and how polarised this move is seen to be. Because if it's the case that half the country think, go Boris Johnson, you're doing this for us, you know, the parliament isn't on our side anymore, we just want to see Brexit happen at any cost, that could work quite well for Boris Johnson. But actually, if you start to see people who voted to leave the EU, people who perhaps aren't that bothered about Brexit either way, start to say, well, actually, this prime minister is somebody who just is, you know, going, you know, is going beyond the pale in trying to make this happen, then I think you get a sense that actually this might be a tactic that might not work.
Yeah,
for Boris Johnson.
I mean, I find it quite easy to sort of project how Boris Johnson could sort of win the narrative war of an election. You know, that you stand up and you say, look, I've got this awful Remain Parliament, they don't respect the will of the people, let's just do this thing, move on, and then you can have as many nurses and as much discipline in your schools as you want, and there'll be tax cuts for everyone. And, you know, it's basically, I can imagine him literally reaching next Thursday, standing in front of Downing Street and saying, look, you could have everything you want for Christmas, but there's a bunch of Remainers in the chimney and Santa can't come unless you get rid of them, so I need a new parliament. There's actually...
Yeah, I remember a prime minister who tried that.
Yeah, and well, exactly, except he's always... And first of all, he'd be a better campaigner. So I can see how that there's a sort of an available, quite effective political narrative, you know, and you feed in a little bit of, and honestly, do you really want Jeremy Corbyn to be prime minister, which would, you know, mobilise a lot of people as well who don't feel that strongly about Brexit. And so the problem is then cephalogically on the ground, actually, where are the seats that then form a Boris Johnson majority? Yeah. And that becomes much harder. And one of the things that I think I've been a little bit surprised by in the last 24 hours, and it's early days, and I think we might see a bit more of this now, is the sense that, going back to the point about constitutional propriety, on what authority is Parliament being prorogued? It's basically a Crown power. It's prerogative power. So the sort of the allegation, as it were, is that Boris Johnson has sort of snatched the crown from the Queen's head and is wielding it as a weapon, and that's not done. That's not something you should do. And the reason he's able to do it is because he is Prime Minister, which is a crown appointment, on the assumption that he commands a majority in the House of Commons. That has never actually been tested. He hasn't tried to legislate since he became Prime Minister. He's only done one day in the chamber.
And he's only got a working majority of one.
Yeah, so well, I don't...
For now.
So the interesting question, do you do think surely you just forget standing order 24 and all the rest of it? I do think, you know, the torpedo that you've got is prove to us that you actually do have a majority in the House of Commons and just do the confidence vote. I'm slightly surprised there isn't more of that.
Yeah, I want to move on and talk about next week, because obviously next week in Parliament is going to be a really crucial time. We're not actually sure how many days that MPs will have in the chamber when they return. The prorogation order seems to suggest they could cancel at any time from the 9th, although he's due to be in front of the liaison committee, a technical thing, but on the 11th, so you know, maybe we hope that it goes on until then. There's talk of this, you know, this cross-party rebel alliance, and one of the things I was super struck by yesterday was Philip Hammond's comment when he said a lot of my colleagues who, and this is probably because they're Tories who generally don't like making moves against their own government, but they wanted to give Boris Johnson that 30 days that he had talked about with Angela Merkel, saying he would deliver an alternative, which made a lot of the kind of queasy soft Tories think, okay, let's just give him this time. And now this has changed their minds because they know they don't have that 30 days to give him. And that, so next week you have a number of days to potentially pass legislation to demand a extension in the event of no deal. And if we remember back in January or February, whenever it was, when there was the attempts to pass, and then eventually they did pass the Cooper-Letwin bill, which mandated an extension, although by that time Theresa May was going to do it anyway. That took 4 days. So is it possible, is basically my question. Like, yes, we've narrowed the window, but if people are organised enough, is it possible, and would it even matter if they did pass that legislation?
I think it's possible. The problem is there's so much uncertainty around this. So there's a lot of worry about the House of Lords from rebel MPs, for example. There's a fear that in the House of Lords, peers who are hostile to the idea of mandating Boris Johnson to ask for an extension and basically blocking a no deal could filibuster and stop the bill going through. The issue is, because it's a proroguing of Parliament, as soon as Parliament kind of finishes, any bills that are in process just sort of die, and then you have to start again when Parliament comes back. I think it's October the 14th. So next week is going to feel like a massive race to get this done. So I think working in its favour is this idea, Jess, as you said, that perhaps this could backfire on Boris Johnson. You know, I was somebody who always thought if you've got Parliament sitting for the bulk of September and October minus the conference season, you might not see any movement until much later on anyway, because one of the things that we know about some Tory rebels is they want to leave it till the last possible moment to vote against their government. And if they think that there's a possibility of a deal, they might not have, you know, gone for any moves in early September. So there is a risk that this backfires and, as you say, may galvanise MPs to act sooner than they might otherwise. But there are all these other factors. It's a possibility, but so much depends, I think, on what happens in Parliament, what might happen in the Lords. There's lots of talk about other tactics that the government has got up its sleeve, that Dominic Cummings and Nikki DaCosta, the Director of Legislative Affairs and Number 10, have been working on. Even things as extreme as, for example, creating extra bank holidays so Parliament can't be recalled, for example. So, I mean, some quite bonkers stuff in the mix there.
Although we do like a bank holiday.
We do like a bank holiday, obviously, but not if it's going to take us to a no deal Brexit round.
People might destroy the country in the process.
I think part of the tactics of proroguing Parliament was to A, make it more difficult, but also throw a massive spanner in the works into the plans that anti-no deal MPs have been developing. And it does throw in more uncertainty, because the less time you've got, the less certain it is that you can get something through. So I think it's all up for grabs next week.
I mean, there's an article by Alex Wickham in BuzzFeed, which mocked the fact that a lot of the Remain so-called alliance had spent the summer talking about making Ken Clark prime minister, whilst the Brexiteers had been wargaming possible.
I mean, I just don't buy. It was a hilarious thing to have in the papers, and you had it was great for Joe Swinson's big launch or whatever. I don't necessarily think that's what the grown-ups were doing behind the scenes.
Maybe not. I mean, I think I mean there has been clearly a lot of strategic planning in wargaming and so on being taking place by the top Brexiteers. I mean, the issue is, will there be what are Tory rebels? I mean, Dominic Grieve he's often portrayed as this kind of hero of Romania. He once voted against his own amendment, and the fact you can see in The Spectator and elsewhere chatter, which I think might be fed by certain cynical people in Number 10, which is because Parliament is prorogued, then obviously as Sonia's put it, legislation it all starts afresh. That some sort of Theresa May revamp deal could be put to Parliament, and because of what's happened, and certain Labour MPs like Gareth Snell and Ruth Smeath will all go and vote for that deal and get it through somehow. But I think that's been done to allow Tory rebels to think to themselves, well, actually, I can just hang on as long as possible because maybe this deal will come back and I'll just vote for it again.
I think one of the biggest questions and something that people differ on very much in terms of their interpretation of what's going on is whether Plan A is still, from Number 10, still actually get a deal, exactly as Owen described, that ultimately it's just sort of Theresa May's strategy on steroids, or whether actually the central assumption deep down is obviously it's going to be no deal, but we need to manoeuvre it into a way where either it feels that it's been forced, you can say it's been forced on us by stupid recalcitrant Remainers and the wicked, unhelpful European Union. And
both those things could be true.
Exactly,
right?
Absolutely right. So both, and crucially, I think there might even be a difference in emphasis, or at least judgment there, between Boris Johnson and Dominic Cummings. Now, I personally have always felt, and nothing has yet changed my mind on this, that anyone who sits in the office of Prime Minister and actually really sort of surveils what they would be doing by leaving the EU without a deal will recoil from that act, and quite sharply, because it is a properly stupid, aggressive, slightly crazy thing to do. I don't think that worries Dominic Cummings. And so, at the moment, there's such a tonal difference between, I mean, the Theresa May administration was so just sort of bad at politics. I mean, they're bad at diplomacy and other things as well. But just on a day-to-day basis, the amount of space they gave their enemies, the amount of opportunity they gave, so the fact that these, disjointed, incoherent alliance of soft Brexiteers, Remainers, people who wanted a referendum, people don't, people who didn't like Brexit but didn't like Jeremy Corbyn more, all these things, that whole mulch of people managed to get at all organised was a function of how useless Theresa May was. And then suddenly you've got an operation in Number 10 that, it's not strategic genius, the awesome Death Star of political power.
Doesn't
it's
need just, to be better.
Exactly,
right?
It's just quite organised.
But also, I genuinely think, I'm not being, obviously, if I'm just going to put my head put myself on the head of the Tory leadership for a slightly surreal moment.
Strange place to be.
It is a strange place to be. But it is an existential question for the Conservative Party, arguably for no deal now. The ERG, the hard Brexiteers of the Parliamentary Party, have made it clear that even if the backstop went, which it won't, that would still be unacceptable. And if they push through a deal, which is in any, even if Boris Johnson calls it a British bulldog deal or whatever, just Theresa May's deal spruced up and repackaged, the Brexit Party will stand in every single constituency and it will be toxified, just as Theresa May's deal was toxified by Boris Johnson and his ally. So I think even if they're thinking to themselves, we're preparing for no deal, and we'll blame it, in that eventuality on the Remainers and the EU, but we will try and get a deal through if we can. They don't really have a choice. They have to go for no deal. Otherwise, potentially, they'll destroy themselves as a party of government.
I'm not sure. I certainly can see how that is compelling, and how that's why there's a significant probability they end up in that situation. I do think there is, I mean, and we've done the numbers game of everyone trying to add up to 321 behind some kind of deal, and you don't get there because of the DUP, because of the ERG, because of various other things. There is a scenario, I suppose, in which actually this, what's happened in the last 24 hours is just sort of trolling the Remainers to try and ramp up, you know, create a very stark dividing line between the people who want to do Brexit and are prepared to do anything for that end, Boris Johnson being the tribune of that as Prime Minister, and the awful establishment parliament that needs to be dissolved and replaced with a more compliant parliament, which you then put to the country actually in a general election, which you start quickly. So after the spending review on Wednesday, you do a big basically pseudo budget spending review where you say, here's money for everyone, here's a few kind of, you know, pseudo left things that we can do to try and shoot Jeremy Corbyn's foxes, will be nice to foxes, and maybe a bit of a tax cut. That's signals coming down the track. Oh look, now we're having a general election. You get back, you hope to win some kind of majority, you're back towards the end of October before Brexit Day, and then you will have the numbers available to say, okay, we'll do a Northern Ireland only backstop, see you later DUP, it's a deal, bish bash bosh, done, you're out.
Do you buy this idea that I think it was Stephen Kinnock saying it in our paper a few weeks ago, that there are sort of 50 to 60 Labour MPs who, when push comes to shove in that last week after the EU Council ratifies some sort of minor tweaks, probably without any of the concessions that Theresa May gave to Labour MPs, they will just all decide that it's that they don't back a second referendum. They do feel like they need to deliver Brexit somehow, and no deal is worse, so they'll just back Boris Johnson. I mean, Tories have been hoping against hope that this is the case for a very long time, and you know, is this the moment where that might happen?
I mean, I think that sounds too high to me. I think there will be some Labour MPs who sort of make that choice. I think it's, you know, Stephen Kinnock talking it up a bit. I mean, I think you're absolutely right, though. There's a group of Labour MPs who are opposed to sort of everything at the moment. They're opposed to no deal. They're opposed to the deal that Theresa May got or any sort of variation that Boris Johnson might be able to get on that. And they're opposed to a referendum. So it sort of leaves the question, what are you in favour of? And they, at some point, they are going to have to take a call, I think, because as we move closer towards October the 31st, I mean, they can sort of save their skin a bit by, I think one of the reasons why the sort of legislative block to no deal is the most popular route forward, and it's one that sort of, you know, different sort of coalitions of, you know, different parties and combinations of MPs have been able to coalesce behind, is because it doesn't require people to say what they're in favour of, what's next. It's literally just, you know, blocking no deal and asking for an extension. So I think they can sort of get behind that position for a while. But what Boris Johnson is trying to do is trying to make it a choice between deal and no deal in late October. And I think if he succeeded in that, then there would be some Labour MPs who voted for it. But I think that sounds kind of high to me, because it goes back to this issue, which is why a lot of Labour MPs felt they couldn't support Theresa May's deal, was it was a bit of a blank cheque. You're sort of voting for the withdrawal agreement and then basically saying to the government of the day, it's your job to negotiate with the EU the final relationship and what that looks like. And Theresa May, you know, was offering to sort of give them guarantees on employment rights, whatever. There's no way that those guarantees could have bound a future parliament. So, you know, the problem is that if Labour MPs vote for Boris Johnson's deal, they're essentially, if he just say he got a deal, they're essentially kind of handing him a bit of a blank cheque to form, you know, they're bolstering his government. They're kind of ensuring that he's going to stick around as PM for longer, probably. And then, you know, they're giving him a bit of a blank cheque to go and negotiate the final settlement with the EU. And the idea that Boris Johnson is going to sort of negotiate a final trade deal with the EU that protects employment rights with someone like Dominic Cummings working for him is a bit too far-fetched, I think.
Yeah, Kinnock's numbers are way, way too high. I think I can imagine about 20 Labour MPs going down that route. You can name people like Lisa Nandy, Gareth Snell, as I've already said, Rhys Meath, who would go down that direction. Why destroy your political career to hand Boris Johnson a blank cheque, as Sonia puts it? I think, though, what is very important is to, you know, the Lib Dems are demanding a referendum before a general election, which is just bizarre, because there is no majority for the reasons described for a referendum in Parliament. There is nearly a quarter of the parliamentary Labour Party who just do not want a referendum, like Stephen Kinnock, for example. like Lucy Powell, who's the MP for Manchester Central. And, you know, there's this idea on the one hand that Corbyn is this terribly authoritarian Stalinist leader and all the rest of it, and on the other that he must strong arm MPs who aren't even on the same wing of the party as him, who are completely opposed to a referendum. But that's the central demand of the Lib Dems, that before a general election even happens, before the British people have even voted for a referendum, which of course would be the policy of Labour, the Lib Dems, the Greens and others, that there should be some sort of transient government which doesn't do anything for several months, pushes through a referendum which there's no majority in Parliament for, which has never got a mandate, which the British people have never voted for. So I think it's just very important to shoot that fox down, because it's going to keep re-emerging.
Big question for the last few minutes. When's the moment for a confidence vote? Is it before the prorogation, or is it after? If you were Jeremy Corbyn, when would you do it?
That's a good question in terms of the tactics of what would suit, because there's a different question, which is what would suit the sort of the Labour parties and the Labour leaders' preferred outcome, which, you know, by definition isn't necessarily the same as what suits people who are most concerned about Brexit, because Labour Party and Remain aren't the same thing. As I said earlier, all I can say is I think if you're trying to make the point and land the blow, which is this is an illegitimate thing that the government is doing, you have to zero in on the fact that this is a prime minister who is unelected, who doesn't have his own mandate, wielding crown powers in as a weapon, and he has no right to do that. And the way you make that point is by saying, you only get to be prime minister if you enjoy the confidence of the House of Commons. So I would pull the trigger. My instinct, and I haven't thought this through, admittedly, very long, is you now have to just go straight to confidence vote ASAP.
Yeah, the problem is, though, is you really need to go for it once you're sure you can win it. And I think while there is, you know, next week all the focus is going to be on the legislative block to no deal rather than the vote of no confidence, I sort of feel that while that option is on the table, there are Conservative MPs who just won't go for a vote of no confidence if they think
and
there's an alternative.
Well, yeah,
and
no,
independence.
Will Kate Hoey, for example, how will she vote? It'll be interesting. She's got nothing to lose now. She's not standing again. I mean, I suppose the danger is be careful what you wish for, because if they do lose and no alternative is assembled, Boris Johnson will have the power to name a general election at a time of his own choosing, which could well be Friday, just after No Deal happens.
Which they've made clear. Downing Street have sort of sources of
absolutely. They're making it abundantly clear. And, you know, that's definitely Dominic Cummings. You know, he really believes that is a very credible and real option they can do. We normally have an election on a Thursday, but that's, like so much of the so-called British constitution, a precedent, not something written into law. So it's entirely feasible. And then what? You know, election laws kicking on Friday, No Deal chaos might be happening, but how will the TV be even to be able to discuss what's happening around us? It would be the most perverse, surreal political event, an absolute disgrace, morally, politically, and all the rest of it, but they could do it.
And at the end of the day, this is what Boris Johnson and Dominic Cummings were trying to achieve with the prorogation of Parliament. They're trying to sort of sow division within the ranks of anti-No Deal MPs. And, you know, we had a sort of couple of weeks where there was lots of infighting and people were talking about vote of no confidence and couldn't agree on, you know, the person who might lead a temporary government. And then, hey presto, you started to see some coalescence around this idea of this legislative block. And then Boris Johnson and Dominic Cummings come along and they chuck a bit of a grenade into that. So, you know, it takes us back. It may focus the minds next week on a legislative block. It may focus minds on a vote of no confidence. But there's a chance that it also, you know, creates divisions around tactics again, which is what I think Number 10 would be hoping.
That's certainly the precedent, isn't it? I mean, no one gets poor kind of betting against the organisation and courage of the Remainers in Parliament.
On that note, thanks very much all. We'll return next Thursday. Thanks to all our guests, Raphael Baer, Owen Jones and Sonia Soder. The producer was Catherine Godfrey. I'm Jessica Elgott. Thanks for listening.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.